Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. He's temper all the times, the times I
welcome arrive. To Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer dude and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
I was looking back through our old episodes, and it was kind of funny, about a year ago, almost to the day, we were talking about something very similar as to what we're going to talk about on this episode. It was episode number 178 in January of 2020.
Oh, yeah?
There was an impeachment episode.
Oh, well, you know, I think there was some impeachment talk going on back in those days.
There certainly was, and there's certainly some going on right now.
Yeah, it's like it's become... annual thing.
I feel like it's one of those movie sequels, like Impeachment Part 2 or The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, more like that. Empire Strikes Back. That's
for
sure.
Have you seen the movie Into the Spider-Verse? It's the animated Spider-Man movie that came out.
I know what you're talking about. I've seen the previews on it and stuff, but no, I have not seen the movie. I've heard it was good, though, and I know that it had the guy is the voice of one of them that was in New Girl. And I like him.
I'm not sure who you're talking about, but it did have some good voice actors in it.
He played Nick. He played Nick on New Girl. I'm not sure what character in Spider-Verse he played.
Well, it's funny because they kind of make fun of the fact that every time there's a new Spider-Man movie, they have to give a new backstory. Yeah. And so several times during the movie, they say, all right, people, let's do this one last time. My name is Peter Parker. I was bitten by a radioactive spider. For the last 22 years, I thought I was the one and only Spider-Man. I'm pretty sure you know the rest. Like, I feel that's kind of like how this impeachment thing is going. It's like the end of the Spider-Verse thing going over and over again. It's like, all right, let's do this one last time.
Well, the only thing I'll say is I think this one is completely different from the last one.
I tend to agree with you. I think the last one was a bit of a reach. But this one seems to be a bit more on point. And well, it has a bit more bipartisan support, too, which that should tell you something.
Not only that, this one has the whole world as a witness, including the people that have to vote. They had a bird's eye view of what this whole thing is about. So it makes this probably, well, not that there's been that many impeachments, but this makes this probably the strangest one or whatever that's ever taken place.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean... It was pretty much recorded in live action.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to get people to come in and testify and everything for impeachment. But it seems that everybody that needs to testify is also going to be part of the body that is making the decision because they were all there as this monumental event happened.
That's kind of true, yeah. They're the jury was a witness.
That's right. And, you know, what witnesses do you have? Well, you.
Well, you know, it's kind of a weird topic, the way it's going to shake out. It's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens when it actually does go to trial in the Senate. So we had talked about kind of the procedure of it before, and I think we'll go over that a little bit, too, on this episode. But one of the other things that you wanted to talk about were some of the different terms that are thrown out there that people use quite a bit.
Right. Well, there's two of them that you keep hearing, and that's insurrection and sedition.
Yeah. And those come from the U.S. Code, and there's several different sections here that I thought were kind of maybe a little bit important to talk about. The first one was 2381, which is treason. Which is not one that you mentioned, but one that's kind of also thrown in that same, it's in that same family.
Yeah, it'd be hard to do one without the other.
Yeah, well, treason's a little bit different, but it says, whoever owing allegiance to the United States levies war against them or adheres to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere is guilty of treason and shall suffer death or shall be imprisoned not less than 5 years and fined under this title, but not less than 10,000, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. So I don't think treason is really appropriate in this circumstance by this definition, because you're going to have a bit of trouble proving that, because the section about adheres to their enemies. So, you know, who really is their enemies? That's going to be, I think we can probably agree that people that broke into the Capitol probably were enemies of democracy in some instance, but I still think that's a bit of a reach to try them under that section.
Yeah, I would think you would have a hard time doing that and saying that what they did was an act of war. You know, nobody declared war, so I don't know that it could be an act of war without it being declared. It is certainly an act that violates, that goes against, it was an act that tried to upend our governmental workings.
Right. And there's just other sections that are a bit better suited for that.
I agree.
So the other section going down the list was 2383, rebellion or insurrection. And that reads, whoever incites, sets on foot, assists, or engages in any rebellion or insurrection against the authority of the United States or the laws thereof, or gives aid or comfort thereto, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. So I think we're getting there. We're getting a bit more warm.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that there was an insurrection, that there were people that stormed the Capitol with a stated purpose of hanging the vice president, taking certain representatives hostage, and forcing them to declare Trump the president, as opposed to confirming Biden as being the lawful president. So they wanted to overthrow the government, in effect, and make Trump their king, I guess. I guess every 4 years they would march there and do the same thing.
What's your end goal here? I'm not really familiar. I don't really understand. The last section is 2384, which also is very appropriate. Seditious conspiracy. This one reads, if two or more persons in any state or territory or in any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States conspire to overthrow, put down, or to destroy by force the government of the United States, comma, or to levy war against them, comma, or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States, or by force seize, take, or possess any property of the United States contrary to the authority thereof, they shall each be fined under this title in prison not more than 20 years or both. So by the time we get down to that one seems exactly on point. I mean,
yeah.
And the reason I like that one in particular is because there's so many videos and instances of people saying, we did it, we stopped the vote, we stopped them from electing Biden or doing what they were supposed to do.
Exactly.
And if you look at that section, they were using force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States. The law of the United States that day was for Congress to meet in joint session and to recognize the electors and select a new president. And yeah, they stopped that, which is, that's textbook what it looks like it's for.
Yeah, and it was all started when Pence didn't do what Trump wanted him to do, which was not follow the Constitution but make up his own rules and do something that is not allowed under any law of the United States. And so he didn't break the law, they did.
Yeah, and that's kind of when you go back to the inciting speech. I think when you look at what he said, you look at his actual speech he made right there before they marched down to Congress. But then I think you also have to look at how he kind of set it up with everything that he put on Twitter and all the statements he made before that to kind of,
it was a call to arms.
Yeah. Kind of put the kindling on the fire before finally striking the match at the speech.
He was asking these people to come to Washington so that if he didn't get his way, that they could somehow storm the Capitol and do it by force.
Yeah.
I think he had thoughts he could make the military do it. And you had several of the Joint Chiefs of Staff make comments to the effect that they serve the United States government and they don't serve any one man. So they had made those statements like a couple weeks prior to any of this. I think that was kind of putting that out there just in case, Mr. Trump, you think you're going to ask us to do your work. This is not the way those things happen.
Yeah. So I think all those different code sections definitely apply to the people who went into the Capitol building and all that, because you know, they weren't supposed to be there, and their acts were definitely fitting under the Seditious Conspiracy Act. But then when you look at Trump's actual statements and his conspiracy role in that, I think it does get a bit harder to prove that under a criminal standard because of the vagueness of some of the things he said. Now, if you read between the lines and you kind of piece through it, I think you can kind of see what his intent might have been, but it definitely is a much harder case, I think, against him, criminally speaking, for those kinds of charges. Whereas the people that actually did it, I think it's almost open and shut.
Well, unless you get to the insurrection part, and it says whoever incites or sets on foot. And yeah. I think he certainly did incite and set them afoot, because he said, I'm going to join you. We're going to march down there to the Capitol, and we're going to make things right.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't say go in and kill people and stuff, but he basically insinuated that.
He did, and that's what makes it a bit harder case to prove, is you have to prove the insinuations. And I'm not saying, you know, he didn't do it or that that wasn't what he intended or anything like that, because I think that is what he intended for them to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he really thought it through at the time. Like, I don't think he really thinks many things through.
He thanked them. When they were storming the Capitol, he thanked them and called them fine people and said, now it's time to go home.
Yeah.
But I think he was proud. He was proud that he was able to get people to do that kind of thing that they probably wouldn't ordinarily do under normal circumstances.
Yeah. Well, if you saw whenever they arrested the West Virginia House of Delegates member, Eric mm-hmm. Evans,
right?
His grandmother, when they showed her on the video, she said, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Trump, for
inviting him to the Capitol or whatever.
Yeah, for starting a, which I forget her exact words, but
I think he said something like for inviting him or asking him to come to the Capitol or something like that, yeah. Which he did.
Getting him involved in this mess. She was not happy about the whole situation. So I think there's a lot of people that probably aren't very happy about how this went down aftermath, at least.
Well, you know, Homeland Security has been saying for a couple of years that the biggest threat to American well-being is domestic terrorism.
It's
not any other country coming in here and doing anything or flying planes into the World Trade Center. Our biggest threat is these militias and these cells that are around here of disgruntled Americans.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of one of those things that we're our own worst enemies when it comes to that, because we try to be so accepting of free speech and allowing people to be able to voice their opinions that we don't actually hinder people from doing things like that. So, for example, like in Germany, denying the Holocaust or having any kind of Nazi memorabilia, it's pretty much against the law there.
It is against the law, yeah. Germans don't allow Nazis, but we do.
Yeah.
That blows my mind.
It does, but if you think about the American system and our freedoms that we have here, it makes perfect sense as to why that is, but at the same time, like I said, we're our own worst enemies. Because we don't try to stifle that kind of speech. So, one interesting thing is I saw some people talking about some possible defenses to whatever Donald Trump said, saying mm-hmm. that it was, you know, freedom of speech and whatnot.
Right.
I think there's a bit of a problem with that, and I want to get into it, but I think there actually might be a couple motions pending before the court today.
Why, yes, if it pleases your insidership, we would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
Insidership?
That's like insight-ership. I don't know. Or I could call you, yes, you're insurrectionist, sir.
Hey, I didn't insurrect anything, and I didn't incite anything, but us two about to read some ads here. So,
incited me to read this ad.
Yeah, there you go. It's a call to action.
We have with us a brand new advertiser, and they are Word Forest.
So everyone knows keeping your body in shape is important, but it's also important to keep your mind sharp. I've been leveling up my focus with Word Forest.
Lord knows I need my mind sharp. Word Forest is my new favorite game. It's a word puzzle app, and it's free. That's my favorite cost.
That's right. Word Forest is an app made for word search addicts. You can connect letters in any direction to form hidden words and matches, and it has over 2,000 levels, so you never get bored playing.
It starts easy, but gets harder as you get better. It's fun. Find as many words as possible to earn bonus coins to uncover hidden words.
And Word Forest is a relaxing game with a nature setting and a great way to keep your mind sharp and grow your vocabulary.
Put yourself to the test in this fun and addicting brain game. Right now, Word Forest is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play.
So here's what you need to do. Stop mindlessly scrolling through social media and keep your mind sharp. I know there's a lot of stuff out there to look at right now, but it's not helping you.
That's right. Just go to the Apple or Google store and search for Word Forest.
Download Word Forest for free today and get ready to flex your brain muscles.
That's right. It's free. You don't even have to type in court appointed or anything. It's free anyway. Download Word Forest today.
Indubitably.
Now we have back with us for our second advertiser, our good friends at Green Chef.
So you might be asking yourself, what is Green Chef? Green Chef is the first USDA-certified organic meal kit company. Green Chef makes eating well easy and affordable with plans to fit every lifestyle.
Whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, vegetarian, or just looking to eat healthier, there's a range of recipes to suit any diet or preference.
Green Chef is the first ever and only keto meal kit on the market. It makes sticking to a low-carb lifestyle easy with recipes averaging only 14 net carbs each.
Green Chef is the most sustainable meal kit, offsetting 100% of its direct carbon emissions and plastic packaging in every box, so you can feel great about what you're eating and how it got to your table.
Now, we've had Green Chef boxes delivered to us, and we love cooking the different recipes. It's great. The instructions are easy, simple to follow. Even you and I can do it. We have a video of us cooking a HelloFresh box, which is a sister company.
That's right. And if I can follow a recipe and make a gourmet meal, I think pretty much anybody can.
So go to greenchef.com, court90, and use the code court90 to get $90 off, including free shipping.
That's right. Go to greenchef.com/court90 and use code court90 to get $90 off, including free shipping. That's a lot of 90s. If I were you, I'd play that number on the lottery.
That's right. So check out Green Chef and enjoy. So now, there were some people that I saw on different social media and some different articles talking about how President Trump, even though he's the president, he has the right to free speech himself. He can say whatever he wants because he's an American citizen as well. And we guarantee free speech to the citizens.
That's right.
And that is generally true. But there are limits to free speech. And there's a whole bunch of different Supreme Court cases that talk about free speech. Now, one thing in particular that I thought was very appropriate, have you ever heard the phrase shouting fire in a crowded theater?
That's the thing that always comes to mind. That's the one thing that I know about free speech is that it made that exception to, like, if someone were to shout fire in a movie theater when there wasn't a fire. You can't do those kind of things, and you can't hide behind that as free speech.
Yeah, the phrase is paraphrasing of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes' opinion in the U.S. Supreme Court case Schneck v. U.S. in 1919. And that case held that the defendant's speech in opposition to the draft in World War I was not protected free speech under the First Amendment. The case was kind of overturned by a subsequent case called Brandenburg v. Ohio in 1969, which limited the scope of banned speech to that which would be directed and likely to incite imminent lawless action, basically a riot. The Brandenburg case is the one that had had to do with the KKK, where there was a Klan rally and a person was later convicted in Ohio under one of the Ohio laws. The law basically made it illegal to advocate crime, sabotage, violence, or unlawful methods of terrorism as a means of accomplishing industrial or political reform, as well as assembling with any society, group, or assemblage of persons formed to teach or advocate the doctrines of criminal syndicalism. Now, the court's opinion in Brandenburg held that the Ohio law had actually violated Brandenburg's right to free speech, and the court used a two-pronged test to evaluate the speech acts. You know how the U.S. Supreme Court, they love their multi-pronged tests.
They love those prongs.
They do. And the prongs are this. Number one, speech can be prohibited if it is, quote, directed at inciting or producing imminent lawless action, end quote, and two, is likely to incite or produce such action. So if you look at that in that two-pronged test under Brandenburg, did what Trump say, is it protected? Or is it essentially kind of similar to the shouting fire in a crowded theater? Now, that's not the exact test the Supreme Court uses, but I'm just kind of throwing that out there as an analogy. But
you know, it incited those people to commit criminal offenses. They went into area they were not allowed to be in. They vandalized it. They actually, people with zip ties, they had a ring of zip ties. They had evil intent.
Yeah.
They were going to kidnap somebody. Some of those people were armed.
Certainly.
Somebody beat a Capitol cop with a fire extinguisher and he died.
Yeah. So I think his language was kind of vague. It's not the slam dunk case that you would want it to be, where he explicitly said, I want you to march down there, kick down the doors, and stop that vote. That would be a slam dunk case.
He said he wants them to fight like hell.
Right. But again, I think it's a winnable case, but you're going to have to look a little bit deeper than the actual words he said, and people are going to have to kind of read between the lines. They're going to have to look at the penumbras and kind of read between the lines and see what's there.
He had a volatile situation, and he had to have known that when he was speaking to them when they were out there.
Yeah.
And that he would point them in that direction. He basically lit the fuse and walked away.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the things I haven't seen actual sites to this, but these are very troubling thoughts, is that he was actually surprised that no one else in the White House was kind of happy as he was, or not celebrating with him that this was happening, because he was kind of glad it was.
Oh yeah. And this was praise to him. This was soothing his ego that all these people would do it. They would actually become criminals on his behalf if he asked them to.
Now, that's the one part where if you're trying to prove your case, you might be able to call those people in to testify. Did you see the president after it happened? What was the president's mood? Was he happy? Did he look agitated? Did he look upset? Did he say, oh my gosh, what's happening? This isn't what I want to have happen. Or was he saying things like, can you believe they did that for me? Like, yeah, they stopped the vote. Good job. Like,
well, that's he hesitated calling in help for him.
Yeah.
They were saying, we got to have more troops in here. We got to have people. And he wouldn't do anything at first.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it unfold in real time, just with my mouth open, just thinking, what in the world am I watching?
That was one of the things that got me when I was getting ready for this. You look up insurrection, and it gives you the Insurrection Act of 1807. But what it keeps mentioning in that is that it gives the President of the United States the power to deploy U.S. military and federalized National Guard troops within the United States in certain circumstances. So here's your problem. The only person under the Insurrection Act that can do that is involved in the insurrection. He's not going to call them.
Yeah, it's a little problematic. And the other thing is, too, is evidently the National Guard was called in by the vice president, according to some reports, that they kind of essentially bypassed President Trump.
They had to when they realized he wasn't going to help. Because I think like 45 minutes went by from them initially calling him and saying, we got to have help here, until something was finally done.
So now that brings us to where we are currently with the president's predicament. He was impeached by the House. So I want to go over what impeachment is and how it works. So an impeachment is instituted by a written accusation called the Articles of Impeachment. Now that's already been brought to the House. They've already debated it, and it was voted on. So you can kind of think of the articles of impeachment similar to that of an indictment or something that goes in front of a grand jury, which I've made that comparison before. So that's the charging document that is given to the grand jury. And that always brings to mind the famous quote from New York Judge Sal Wachler, said in 1985, if a district attorney wanted, a grand jury would indict a ham sandwich.
I remember you saying that before.
I love that phrase.
I think that's part of the title for that episode that we talked about, that ham sandwich defense, I think, something like that.
It might have been. Now, I think this was way more than a ham sandwich. This was a club. It had different layers of meat. There was bacon, might have been toasted and had some mayo on it. I don't know.
But, yeah. And there's only one article that they presented. Sometimes it's multiple, but for this one, there's only one article that they presented.
Yep.
And it's a big one.
So the resolution starts out, Donald John Trump, President of the United States, is impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and that the following article of impeachment be exhibited to the United States Senate. So the way it works is the House votes on it, and if it passes the House, this article of impeachment, then it goes over to the Senate. And it kind of goes through the different language of how that procedure works. And then it says, on January 6, 2021, pursuant to the 12th Amendment of the United States Constitution, the Vice President of the United States, the House of Representatives, and the Senate met at the United States Capitol for a joint session of Congress to count the votes of the Electoral College. Shortly before the joint session commenced, President Trump addressed a crowd of his political supporters nearby. There, he reiterated false claims that, quote, we won this election and we won it by a landslide, quote. He also willfully made statements that encouraged and foreseeably resulted in imminent lawless action at the Capitol. Incited by the President Trump, a mob unlawfully breached the Capitol, injured law enforcement personnel, menaced members of Congress and the Vice President, interfered with the joint session's solemn constitutional duty to certify the election results, and engaged in violent, deadly, destructive, and seditious acts. President Trump's conduct was consistent with his prior efforts to subvert and obstruct the certification of the results of the 2020 presidential election. These prior efforts include, but are not limited to, a phone call to the Georgia Secretary of State to find enough votes to overturn it. In all of this, President Trump gravely endangered the security of the United States and the institutions of government. And it says, whereby President Trump, by such conduct, has demonstrated that he will remain a threat to national security, democracy, and Constitution if allowed to remain in office, and has acted in a manner grossly incompatible with self-governance and the rule of law. So
he's also proven that he could never be someone that should ever hold the office again. And that may be one of the biggest things in the impeachment, is that it doesn't allow you to hold office again.
Well, no, just because he gets impeached doesn't mean he can't hold
office. If he's convicted.
Well, I mean, if he's convicted, he still could technically hold office again. They'd have to pass a separate resolution, I believe, to say he can't hold office. So the impeachment itself doesn't necessarily mean that, the conviction of that. So, but if you read through what they're talking about, they're kind of parroting those laws that we talked about earlier, the treason, rebellion, insurrection, seditious conspiracy, talking about inciting things.
Yeah. You know, 'cause if you're guilty of insurrection, you can't hold office again.
That's true. Yeah. So the impeachment has to be brought on certain grounds, which is generally the high crimes and misdemeanors. That's the one thing that's mentioned in the Constitution, which is why that articles of impeachment start off with that. Treason, bribery, or other high crimes or misdemeanors is really not specified in the Constitution. And there's been a lot of debate about what it actually means. And I think we talked about that at length on the prior episode too, about what is a high crime and misdemeanor.
Yeah, and it's hard to define. It's very nebulous.
So when you're looking at it, I went back and I found a Harvard Law Review article from 1912, and it talks about impeachment of the federal judiciary. And it says, to determine whether or not an act or course of conduct is sufficient in law to support an impeachment, resort must be had to the eternal principles of right applied to the public propriety of civil morality. The offense must be prejudicial to the public interest, and here's where it gets interesting, and it must flow from a willful intent, comma, or a reckless disregard of duty. It may constitute an intentional violation of positive law, or it may be an official dereliction of commission or omission, a serious breach of moral obligation, or other gross impropriety of personal conduct that, in its natural consequences, tends to bring an office into contempt and disrepute. So that's not binding law or anything like that, but that's an older law review article talking about the definition of high crimes or misdemeanors. And if I'm looking at that as trying to define what a high crime or misdemeanor is, I got to think that's not looking good for him as far as impeachment.
That meets it. I mean, you know, he may not have thought they would do that, but he hoped they would do that. That was his goal, was to try to get them to do that.
And even, I think if you look at that, what I just read, even if he didn't intend for it to happen, he may not have even wanted them to do it, to hope for them to do it. I think it was so reckless that it wantonly endangered the members of Congress and our democracy by what he did. Like, if he is just a bumbling idiot who didn't have any intent, he should have known what he did was going to lead to that.
Yeah, you look out at that crowd, and that was not, a type of crowd that was just going to sit there and clap politely.
Yeah. So now at this point, he has been impeached. He's the first president that's been impeached twice, which is kind of a dubious honor to have, I guess.
He has now, half of all the impeachments for presidents.
And so now it is going to be sent to the Senate for the trial. Mm-hmm. So much like a regular criminal case, the grand jury indicted, and now it's going to be up to the Senate as the jury to decide his fate based on the articles of impeachment. Now, the last time that he was impeached, which was about a year ago, the Chief Justice sat as the judge of the Senate trial.
Right.
And that's because under the Constitution, in case of a presidential impeachment, the Constitution states the Chief Justice presides in the impeachment of a president.
Right.
So the interesting thing about this is that if they're not going to have the trial while he is still president after January 20th, then that means technically he would not be the president, and therefore it may not be viewed as an impeachment of a president. He's an ex-president.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Chief Justice doesn't preside over the trial, then it would fall onto the person who is in charge of the Senate, who is the presides over the Senate. So that would be the vice president.
Right.
So there is a theory that Kamala Harris could be the one who presides over the trial of Trump if he was impeached, since he is no longer a sitting president.
That'd be interesting.
Well, it would be extremely interesting because essentially he was the one who would have incited to try to keep her from having that office.
Yeah, that's right.
So, and if that happens, then they possibly might try to move to disqualify her, in which case the thought is that it would probably go to the Senate President Pro Temp, which would be Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. So one of those individuals is going to most likely preside over the trial of it. I think it will probably still be the Chief Justice, even though it doesn't specifically say that the Chief Justice would preside over an ex-president. I think that's probably the look we need to have. I don't think we want to have the vice president presiding over this.
Yeah, that would look too partisan.
It would look very partisan and very shady. And I think the Chief Justice did a great job last time. You know, he was very, very even about how he applied the law. And, say what you want about Chief Justice Roberts and him being a conservative or, people complaining about him. I mean, I think both sides don't like him. That tells me he's probably doing his job.
That's right. Now, there was two things that I've read about impeachment that I found interesting. One is the standard of proof. The standard of proof required for impeachment and conviction is also left to the discretion of individual representatives and senators, respectively. Defendants have argued that impeachment trials are in the nature of criminal proceedings, with convictions carrying grave consequences for the accused, and that therefore proof beyond a reasonable doubt should be the applicable standard. House managers have argued that a lower standard would be appropriate to better serve the purpose of defending the community against abuse of power, since the defendant does not risk forfeiture of life, liberty, or property for which reasonable doubt standard was set.
Yeah. Well,
so in other words, they don't have a set standard. It's up to the representatives to decide what they think it is, which in and of itself becomes a problem.
It does. if I'm playing devil's advocate here, and I'm trying to say that the higher standards should apply, I would, you know, if it doesn't have to do with life, liberty, or property, I would say that I could make the argument that it does actually have to do with property, because at this point, as the next president, Trump has a vested retirement and all that. So in theory, you could say that if he is impeached, he wouldn't be entitled to that. So therefore, that could divest him of his property. So,
well, but you know, and what they have written in here, though, in the impeachment, is that they don't see it that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm just throwing that out there for arguments.
I see what you're saying, though. Yes, because it's $250,000 a year or something, plus $1 million for traveling and secret security.
Yeah.
Secret Service security.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. To convict Trump, basically 17 of the 50 Republican senators would have to join the 50 Democrats to convict him. And it seems like there's somewhere between 5 and 20, based on the latest count I saw, pretty much willing to do so. So, yeah. And there were some Republicans who voted for the articles of impeachment in the House as well, who broke with ranks.
Well, the other thing about it is that this criminal versus non-criminality activity, it doesn't matter if it was criminal, that the impeachment is simply to remove from office. If there's any remedy criminally or whatever, it has to be held in civil or criminal courts after the fact. But
yeah,
the impeachment itself doesn't do anything.
That's a good argument, too, is that, hey, you know, it shouldn't apply the criminal standard because it's not a criminal trial. If there is going to be a criminal trial, then it would apply to that, but this isn't it.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see that argument as well. I do think it should be somewhere around the civil burden, because it does seem to be kind of a civil type case, not criminal, so to speak. But,
well, you know, I believe what he did was a criminal act, but that's not the point of what we're doing right now. The point is to save us from any further misdeeds. The only thing to do is remove him from office and make it so he can never hold office again, because he's proven that he's unfit for office. Anyone that would incite a crowd to storm our Capitol and possibly kill people, you're not the person that should be leading our country. That's not the way it works.
And also, I think it needs to be a strong statement from our government that if this does happen, this is not how it's going to happen in the future.
All right.
We can't do this. So you need to accept what the will of the people is.
Here's what this all comes down to, though, is this whole farce, and I don't care, anybody can say they believe it. There was no fraudulent activity any more than there is in any election. Is there a handful of votes that probably are wrong? Sure. And some of them, as we went over when we covered that topic, they're honest mistakes. People thought they were registered in this district and they're registered in another one and stuff like that. And so you got a handful of votes here or there, but they probably cancel each other out as to who they go to, especially when you had an election that was almost dead heat.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was no big plot. There was no big fraud. There was no big steal. There was nothing like that. And they knew that. I believe deep down in his heart, Donald Trump knows there was no steal. He's just a sore loser. And that was his way of not having to say, I'm a loser.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that deep down in his heart he knows that. I think people that have, that people like him, I just don't think that they lie to themselves, so to speak. They don't really.
Well, what about Republican senators and congressmen that went along with him on that? Do you think they really believe it too? Or were they just doing it for political expediency?
I think the latter. I think they're trying to save their political careers and jump onto that groundswell of support that he had.
But that's what led to the problem. You propagate a lie and you put a lie out there. And if enough people tell that lie and you've got people out there wanting to hear that lie, then they start acting on that lie. And that's what it all came from. It came from one man that caused that, whether it was by his words that day or whether it was by him standing up and saying on election day, nah, they stole it. It was a big steal. It was rigged. He said the election would be rigged in 2015 if he didn't win the 2016 election. It's only because it was rigged, but he won, so you didn't hear anything.
Well, no, and it worked for him in 2015, 2016, so he thought he'd lay the groundwork again. He's a con man. That's
what he planted that seed, but he grew it, and he watered it, and he nurtured it. And then the other ones, when they threw in with him, if none of those other people had backed him up on that and said, look, you lost, that's the end of it, then I don't think it would have gotten to this point where he could have fanned those flames to go in there. But because he had the others joining with him doing that, they're just as complicit, if you ask me. And now when you ask them to vote for impeachment and they say, oh, this is a time for healing and unity, what about those five people that died? Is nobody going to answer for that? Healing and unity? And yet, if you're going to go that route, at least stand up and say, look, I will confess this. I think the election was fair. I don't think there was any big rigged election, because they won't even admit that. They won't back down from that lie. And then they stand up and say, oh, what we need now is unity. That's their blanket. That's all the Republicans that are allowing this to happen. If we move that line where that is now a part of political action, that you're allowed to do that and it's okay, you're allowed to incite people to go march on others to get your way, that's a hell of a statement for America, what we're accepting.
Yeah. Don't I know what I can say following that?
Well, sometimes I get carried away. My soapbox now, it tipped over, so I'll get off of it.
I don't know what to respond to that, Tommy. I think you're right. We'll just leave it at that.
We'll just move on to legal briefs, huh?
You're on your soapbox there and you went for it. So
that's right.
That brings us to
Legal briefs.
So legal briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal terms and questions that we discussed. And I got a couple of fun ones for him today.
All right.
In an impeachment, what did I say the House's role is kind of like what? If we're talking about relating it to regular criminal trial.
The prosecutors.
Well, close.
Oh,
it's kind of like the grand jury.
Oh, the grand jury. Oh, yeah. It's the house managers that go with the articles of impeachment are like the prosecutors.
Yeah. So once the grand jury or the House kind of votes on the articles of impeachment and sends it over to the Senate, then it becomes incumbent upon the House managers to be the prosecuting attorneys and present their case to the Senate at the trial.
Right. So they got that ham sandwich they're working on there at first.
Yeah. And that was my next question. A prosecuting attorney can indict a what? But you already nailed that one.
That's because it made me hungry. I haven't had dinner yet.
Me either. I think they could probably also indict a turkey sandwich or maybe a pastrami or something like that, too.
So or a pizza bread.
Pizza bread. Now, who presides over an impeachment trial?
The chief of the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court Justice Chief. Whatever.
Roberts. That's right. Over the impeachment of a president. If it's impeachment of something else, then it's not necessarily the Chief Justice.
Right.
So the interesting thing we were talking about is whether or not the Chief Justice is going to preside over an ex-president or not, because this is kind of a new territory for us.
Well, I think they would have to look at it from the standpoint of he was president when he was impeached. So you just continue to carry on as if he's president. I don't think that just because his status changes on January 20th means that you don't continue in the same manner.
Yeah, that could be true. I mean, there's probably going to be an argument made that continuing with the trial is going to be moot, that he no longer needs to be removed from office because he's no longer in office. Mm-hmm. I foresee that to be a pretty strong argument for them. Or not a strong argument, but at least an argument they're going to hang their hat on. So.
But he will suffer repercussions as a part of it, and that's worthwhile.
Now, I was talking about free speech and how it's generally protected, but there's some things like shouting fire in a crowded theater that's not protected. And do you remember the two-pronged test that was articulated in Brandenburg?
Let's see. It was, did the person have reason to believe that his words would cause it? Would cause a reaction like that happened? Wasn't that one of them?
No.
No? Did he have reason to believe that his actions would cause this or something to that effect?
Well, the reasonableness, and this is kind of a different thing. That was talking, I think, more about the that Law Review article as far as impeachment. It was talking about different high crimes and misdemeanors. Oh. The two-prong test articulated in Brandenburg was that speech can be prohibited if it is directed at inciting or producing imminent lawless action, or two, not or, but and two, it is likely to incite or produce such action.
So, well, that was what I was striving for, but I didn't articulate very well. I knew that it was that somebody had to have some type of thought that their words would do it, and then they actually had to have it done.
Yeah. And now the last question. I said the word penumbra. What does that mean?
Penumbra, that means what number is it? Like pneumonia.
No, I was talking about it when you read between the lines.
Oh, yeah.
And that's often used whenever you're talking about the Constitution and what rights it guarantees and things like that. But I kind of threw it in there as a little bit of a trick question for this this language. Umbra means shadow in Latin. So it's kind of the shadows in between the words, which you have to look at. And I think that's what I was trying to get at, is I think if you read between the lines or look at the shadows between the words of Trump, that you can really piece together what was happening when he was doing this. If you look at what he said, the tweets, the totality of the circumstances, I think he's probably possibly criminally guilty, but certainly probably going to be impeached and convicted of it.
One of the things, I hope that he is, but one of the things some of the other people that stormed the Capitol have to answer for, I don't know how they're not guilty of felony murder.
Well, that is an interesting thought, because if they did commit a felony and someone did die during the act or commission of it, then in theory, that could be felony murder.
Yeah, even if they weren't directly involved with it. And you've got a couple of people that were killed. And you know, if you were there and you're guilty of committing a felony, I mean, it can't be okay to break into the Capitol and steal stuff and vandalize and run around and push over Capitol policemen and stuff.
Yeah, I think the impeachment of Trump is not probably the last we've seen of the fallout from this. I would not be surprised if there are some criminal charges brought at some point. All you need is a zealous prosecutor who's hungry for a ham sandwich and a grand jury. And then
thing is, we have to make sure that nobody thinks this is okay. And I don't think that message is out there. I don't think there's probably, I hope it's not 70 million, but I think there's 70 million people that think that was okay, I guess. And you got half the Republicans or most of the Republicans in Congress that think it was okay, and they could have very well have been subject to it too.
I have a couple ex-acquaintances on social media who made comments about it after it happened. I was shocked about their response to it.
Yeah, I've unfriended a lot of people over the last weekend, few days.
Say what you want politically. I mean, I think I try to be pretty reasonable and moderate.
I agree.
I never really cared much for Trump, but as president of the United States, I hoped he would do a good job and lead our nation well. And he has fallen woefully short of that.
Well, I can honestly say this, that a year ago when they impeached him, I didn't really think that he should be convicted of it. I mean, I didn't think that he was a good president, but you know, they took out what did they call it? Mal something of duty, that they took that out as far as an impeachable offense because they felt like that was too political if you took somebody out for not doing the job well.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he was capable of doing the job, but I didn't think that what they had him on last time was enough to impeach him. This time, there's no doubt in my mind that it was. Because this was a strike against the very thing that America stands for.
Yeah. It's a sad day in America, certainly. So, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, and I guess we'll see in the coming weeks about the trial and all that and how it's going to go down, and some of the questions we raised today will be answered. So hang tight.
Well, you know, I think it's funny that Trump badgered those people in Georgia so well. And, you know, Georgia is the peach state, and now he's going to get impeached.
These jokes just write themselves.
It was ripe for it.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is acceptance. I wish I was going to talk about acceptance in the manner that we all become more accepting of each other and learn to get along with each other because of our differences and not in spite of them. Kind of like the John Lennon song, Imagine. I have always loved that song as it makes us think, what if we could strip away all of the material things or ideologies that create barriers, mistrust, and ultimately hate? It's just people. Just people with no agendas or religions or class separations. Just clean, perfect human beings without the stains of society or prejudice. Don't try because you can't. Not in this world, it's just not possible. There's so much hate, conspiracy, division, and bigotry that such a world cannot even be imagined. Then what do I mean by acceptance? The acceptance I am talking about is how much of this are we willing to accept as our normal life? How much hate and discord are we willing to make a part of our everyday being? Because this just isn't a little blip on the radar. This isn't America just going through a little rough patch. We are in need of some deep dive therapy as a nation. Things are going to get worse because we haven't reached rock bottom yet, and nothing changes until you reach rock bottom. We have a pandemic, and no one seems to care. By that, I don't mean literally not one individual, but what I mean is not enough people care for it to make a difference. Hell, half the country won't even wear a mask to save their own family members, let alone that snowflake down the street. So we find that kind of death toll acceptable. We have elected a president that can create his own reality, and half the country believes him. So we have accepted that there is more than one truth and that facts don't matter. We walk by entire families living in the street every day and we don't notice because being unsheltered has become so commonplace that it doesn't raise an eyebrow. Finally, we accept that we have elected officials that can simply decide they don't like the way a Democratic election turned out, so they can stir up their followers and incite them to march on our U.S. Capitol and ransack it and attempt to murder and or kidnap members of our government to try and change the outcome of this election in which only one person said it was rigged. One person that started with this idea back in 2016 when he thought he would lose that election. That was his excuse. Trump never believed it was rigged. That was just the excuse of a bad sport and a loser that couldn't stand being a loser. So one misguided person was able to make this claim, and millions of people really believe this. Really? Really, really? Because I find the whole idea laughable if you really think about all of the logistics involved in actually really perpetrating this event. If they did rig it, why didn't they change all the senatorial votes as well to get complete control? I know they have the majority now, but the Democrats didn't do that. Trump did. Being a bad sport and all his rhetoric cost the Republicans those two seats in Georgia. So now we have to ask ourselves, are we going to accept that armed people marched on the Capitol with stated intentions of committing illegal acts and six people have died as a result, and we just say they were exercising free speech? It was a peaceful gathering? And don't even compare it to Black Lives Matter, because we're not talking about the same thing. If those involved don't pay and pay dearly, and the elected representatives that, regardless of their words, knew there was no steal occurring, and they used the people for political expediency, then we have moved the needle several clicks closer to rock bottom. But I'm afraid we can't even see rock bottom with the binoculars yet. Everyone that participated in that march should be held complicit for felony murder, and every official that spoke and stirred that mob up needs to be removed and never allowed to hold office in these United States again. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.